introduce ourselves. We're going to do it differently this morning. We're going to start there right on my left. And we're not going to do members and our officials differently. We're going to do all of us at one time. So can we start with you there, sir?
You don't
need to use the mics.
Let's see how it goes. Let's start with this.
Morning, everybody. It's Mahmoud Hussain from PMG. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jafalou, and I'm from the Western Cape in the NTOB.
Good morning. My name is Willem Carbon. I represent the Northern Cape province.
Good morning. My name is Bosi Makoye. I'm from the Eastern Cape province.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Wimot of the Cape. I'm part of the committee.
I'm Matheula from the Popo province.
Good morning. I'm Abdullah Sadiq.
Good morning.
Good
morning. My name is Sadam Jumeri. I'm the committee.
Good morning. I'm Eddie Makula. I'm from Kauchen.
Good morning. My name is Nodong Jumeri. I'm from the
DCI. Good morning. Chenge Demana from the DCI.
Good morning, I'm Neil Slaughton, also from the SABS.
Good morning, I'm Philip Lager, the parliamentary liaison.
Thank you very much. We want to welcome particularly the officials and board members from the SABU standard. Thank you very much for responding in this way to our invitation for you to come and do a presentation for us today. Honourable members, just to make sure that we are all together, it is the brighter copy of the presentation that the main presentation will be coming from, the one that has 13 June in bold. I have the earlier version, there's just some minor changes, and when the presentation happens, our attention will be drawn to the changes in the document. But we just wanted to make sure that we work from one document. So I decided that it might be better that we work from the latest version of the document. But then I hope that we all also have the more elaborate version of the document, which is this one. Our apologies that you only got it this morning. I know the Honorable High preferred to work from the bigger one. But there we have the document. We've done the welcoming. Can we look at the apologies? I'm in trouble, Honorable Lord. I was in the meeting yesterday when you sent through your apology. And you sent it to me. Even now, I don't have my cell phone with me. So I did not offer your apology, my table, your apology yesterday.
Doesn't matter.
Because we can't go back and change the minutes.
Fine.
You could deal with it when we deal with the minutes to say, but you have, and then we could correct that. I can't change the minutes. We have to deal with it when we do it. Do we have any other apologies other than the apology from the Honorable Pike, who is still recouping after his time? Martin?
Yes, sir. Honorable Wanda and Honorable Khalid.
No, I have dealt with the question of Honorable Wanda. I'm not going to deal with it again. You see, in the minute, I said we have an apology from him. He's no longer a member of this committee. He doesn't have to apologize when he's not here. He has been replaced by Honorable Martin Wanda.
Okay, my statement.
Oh, we've even taken him off our attendance register already. So we have the apology from the Honorable from SUPS or the DTI and the authority. My question, members, when we look at topologies, is what is happening in the entity is that the department assigns a senior staff member, e.g. DDG, to serve on the entity. So we do have the person here that is serving on such on behalf of DDI. Right? And we have the chairperson of SARS here, so we're dealing with the entity today. So I'm okay if we don't have a member of the executive. The same sub that is here with us now is also appearing to the portfolio later. I think my schedule says that two. And we appreciate the opportunity we have engaged in. I will pass a very important comment from my side just before you start your presentation. Let's deal with the agenda. We're done with apologies. In terms of other items on the agenda, members, we for today, I'm going to, after the presentation from the Bureau of Standards, we're going to look at the minutes of the last meeting, which have been shared with you. We're also going to look at the progress of the committee for the next. Those are the items that they have on the agenda. I want to appreciate the fact that members of the committee were all here on time, and we can therefore start with our proceedings. To the chairperson of staff and to ensure members of the board, the procedure is normally that what you do is you complete your presentation, and then we allow members to engage with. And I'm careful not to say to engage with your presentation, but to engage with me. There might be some things that are not in the presentation that they are at liberty to raise as well. But we take a number of members at one time, at which time we request you to take notes. And then as chairperson, you can decide who responds to the questions from the members. Ordinarily, what we'll do is we'll take one round of questions, say 3-4 minutes, and then but you don't respond to each one after their break, their comments. We wait until we receive the cluster. Honourable Father?
Chairperson, sorry for interrupting. I would just like to know the entity that already came to us during, I think, the last year and a half, around about a year and a half ago, that's also got to do with standards of products. Can you enlighten me just which entity was that? Because I'm not sure, I think SABS was with us already once, but.
Yes.
Yeah, they were here once.
Last year.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But there was another entity, and this is what I'm just going to get my...
NCRS.
Is it? Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir.
NCRS. There's 13 entities within the Department of Trade and Industry, and they are one of the 13. Also, for members of the board and chairperson to just understand that this select committee is dealing with 9 departments of government. In the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development, we have 30 entities, 31. In the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations, which is this one, we have the same members serving on both select committees. On this committee, we have 16 entities. And there's 52 weeks
normal full year. So we cannot practically see all entities within the same year. However, and this is my opening remarks, we when we evaluate ourselves, we are saying that we should engage more regularly with the entity. And when we do our strategic planning, we would look at exactly how we could do that. We have endeavored to at least make sure that we make time to see all the entities. But the engagement with you we are going to pursue is to say that it doesn't help to only try and invite you to a meeting of the select committee. We'll have to look at other ways. When we did our oversight last year, we were just down the road from you at the National Lotteries Commission. We met with the DTI as well, and we passed your building in Pretoria. But it was just not possible within the oversight period to come and physically have a look at how you operate. So we will find creative ways of engaging with you. That's one. The second thing that we're saying is that when you produce reports, we would want to have copies thereof. And that is done through the Office of the Parliamentary Liaison, Office of the Roche. We'll get those reports. You can ask her about the quantities that will be needed. And she's very effective in terms of ensuring that we get those reports. Because that's another way in which we can improve our oversight. The third thing that I want to say, which is the final one, is that from the offset, you should know that we are not happy with subs and subs performance. We are particularly perturbed at the incident that has been reported to one of the committees of parliament vis-a-vis the testing of coal. What has happened at subs at that time? It has been reported to us, so we know what has happened. And we're saying it's not acceptable. But we're also looking then at what is contained in your report, the fourth industrial revolution, and how prepared we are for that. So we welcome the fact that you have applied your minds to that. Finally, in that third comment also, we know that the manufacturing sector, it can be a major player. And Manufacturing Circle is having this conference next week at Centen Convention Center, what I prefer to call the manufacturing endowment. And I have been to those events, and the participation of stakeholders in the manufacturing sector has been great. But we are then saying, how is South African Bureau of Standards setting the standards that will safeguard the users of the manufactured equipment? We will raise the appropriate questions with you once you have done your presentation, but for now, to just say that we want to forewarn you that we're going to be rigorous in terms of how we engage with the presentation that you're giving us today. Not that we are not rigorous all the time, but you may find that some of us is going to be more critical of your presentation than what we would have been under different circumstances. Chairperson, can I then with that hand over to you we have looked at the size of the thing, and we think that it would take you like just over an hour to do the presentation. If that could be done, it would give us sufficient time to also engage with you. Thank you very much again for honoring our invitation, and we look forward to your presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, thank you, Honorable Members of the Committee. I have to apologize, but I'm sensitive to light, so I'm not trying to be shady by wearing dark glasses in a dark room. Chair, we as the SABC, I represent the board, have honored this invitation to do a presentation to the committee, and I've got a powerful team led by the CEO that's going to do the presentation. I think it's important for us to show, as the board, to show our commitment to the oversight that our department, principals, need to have clarified before yourself. The structure of the organization is that we as the board are the accounting authority, and the minister, only the minister, is the executive authority to whom we report. We have a shareholder compact within which we our relationship is regulated and determined. I think it's important for me to state that the direct communication with Parliament and yourself in respect of the testing of coal was...
I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? PMG, you are losing out now. Do you want us to use the mics?
I'll
prefer
it.
Because he's doing his job here. He may get fired.
Okay, thank
sorry.
You. I hope I shouldn't start from scratch, Chairperson. So the specific issue which you obviously pre-warned us are key is one of testing of coal. There was a communication to the chairs of the portfolio committee on ESCOM, portfolio committee on the DTI. That letter was directed from the DG to the portfolio committee. I had then called to write a letter on behalf of the board as the accounting authority to clarify issues. And the position as we stand, Chair, is that there is a forensic investigation that was requested by the minister that has started in respect of that specific issue. It doesn't stop any discussion around it for clarification, but it's prejudicial to the forensic investigation for various media statements to be made, particularly with obviously the privilege of Parliament, it can be, but to then translate it to a media statement it may prejudice this investigation. And I just thought I'd put that on record, Chair. And clarification we are here to do, and your role as oversight, an oversight body should be very rigorous. In terms of the manufacturing sector and the fourth industrial revolution, the Chair, you'll understand that our role always is to be supportive to industry, is to be supportive to manufacturing, which all of us know has been decimated by the Chinese factor in the sense that our manufacturing configuration, even our import configuration, has shifted dramatically to 80% of almost all our imports are coming from China. Whereas before there had been an insistence by our government, by our authorities, that the SABS should test products before they are disseminated or distributed in our country. That requirement in terms of WTO, we're told, others respect WTO, others don't, is now not mandatory
So we rely, or you know, through the NRCS who issue these LOAs, letters of authority, they rely on the test certificate of the Chinese or the place of origin. And therefore, the SABS has to reorient itself to deal with that change issue. The other issue that you mentioned in terms of the fourth industrial revolution is we are obviously under the DTI, and it will come out hopefully in the presentation, aligned to that. Clearly, we have to then build capacity to align ourselves with that. At this point, Chair, please allow me to let my team go through the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members. We take it as a privilege to come in front of the Select Committee to present our work, and we note the concerns from the committee, from various media statements that have been made. On behalf of management, I do want to give honourable members assurances, the CEO, that we as a team take our work very seriously. We take the laws of the country and the PFMA, our legislation that governs the work that we do, very seriously. And we've done everything in our power to work within the laws of the country. Like any other entity that has 1,000 employees and operations that vary spread all over the country, you will have incidents that happen, and the PFMA deals with those incidents in terms of the materiality framework. And within that materiality framework, the SABS has achieved I would say a good record of audit from the AG. We've 2 years ago got a certificate from the accounting authority for 15 audit, consecutive audits. And last year we regressed to an unqualified audit, we're working our way back to that. The challenges that industry has said, my colleagues will talk to those technical issues, and obviously when then the specific questions about how we're dealing with some of those industry challenges come in, we will then engage with them. But Mr. Ian Plakis, who's leading our digital transformation journey, and that's an ecosystem, SABS ecosystem strategy that's going to get a lot of investment, and we'll make the bulk of the presentation. Our executive will then take us through the financials. And we will then engage with the other issues. And our aim is to engage transparently and honestly with the issues, and we will ensure that we address the questions that are being put forward to us. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm going to go slide for slide through. It will be on the screen as well. Okay. So the very first page of the slide pack just speaks to our legislative mandate, what our vision and our mission is and our value. We have presented this to this Portfolio Committee last year, so I'm not going to go through this. I'll just show how this folds through into the work that we do. So on the next page, you will see that's the tutoring mandate, as well as the commercial one playing itself out, and the funding of that. So the top one, which is predominantly the development of standards, is funded by the DTI grant, and it's roughly about 25% of our total income. The rest of the business, which has a commercial mandate, comprises of, at this moment in time, our flagship business, which is a certification business, our mark scheme business, the laboratory services, and we have a training component of the business as well. At this stage, very, very small. Our laboratory services comprises of 8 test areas, 239 test offices, 139 technical signatories, and 1,100 test methods that we test to. We play in the various sectors over there, and you can then see that how our vision plays out in terms of being the trusted standardization and quality assurance service provider. And then our mission speaks to both the mandates as well, and that is to provide standards and conformity assessment services, but to contribute towards the efficient functioning of the economy. So obviously, if you look at that and you look at our financials, you might say that an easy way of us to increase our profitability of the organization would be to increase prices, but or obviously decrease costs. Increase of prices will have a negative impact on the economy, which will be contrary to our mission, which is to contribute towards the functioning of the economy. And our largest expense line is our staff, which is 70%. So it's not an area that we can reduce without severely impacting the economy and obviously the rest of the organization as well. And then we service about 34 key sectors, which is listed below there, and you can see all of those are underpinned by our strategic theme as well. If I move to the next slide, you'll see that our value offering touches a very diverse group of stakeholders across our economy, basically. And I'm not going to go through each one of them, but just so that you can see as an example, if you look at the top part, which is our legislative mandate, the development of national standards, for example, it has a benefit for society. In fact, it's an inclusive growth then, a benefit. If we look at the benefits for industry, it's fair and transparent processes to set national standards. And may I just add on here, we have concluded an MOU with the Competition Commission as well to eliminate and prevent companies basically from colluding together, you know, and manipulating the development of standards. As the committee would know that we only facilitate the process, it is industry that actually facilitates or jointly combined with the FABS develop the standards. And then there is a wider benefit to South Africa, and that is obviously to enable the standards and conformity assessment, but also, very importantly, the protection of the end user, the consumer, and then to ensure fair competition. And then for each one of our other value propositions, you can see that that touches across the society as well. If I move on to the next one, you can see our national footprint over there. And I need to stress, if you do not see an office in one of the regions, that doesn't mean we do not service the region. In fact, we service the continent. Our customers extend beyond South Africa as well. So we do have a national business. 90% of our infrastructure is in Gauteng at our head office. All the other sites are strategically placed. Where there is testing facilities is to be closer to where we're doing the testing. And the main centers that we have for certification is in the Western Cape and KZN and the Eastern Cape. Okay. All the others is testing facilities for a specific area. For example, if I look at East London, you will see there vehicle testing, and that's obviously catering for that local market over there. All the others, the mining testing, is at the mining houses or close to the customers over there. But we do service the entire country. I move on to the next one, you would then see a list of the board structure and our board members, and I'm not going to go into that. I'll move swiftly on to the next two slides, and it's the slide that's displayed on the board over there currently, and that is our national standard. So this is our legislative mandate, and you will see that we develop national standards for economic impact. We ensure that the broader participation in the development of these standards through the technical committees, which industry is represented on. And then we promote the awareness of these standards as well. And we have digitized the whole voting capability as well for standards. Just to highlight some of our achievements for 17-18, we steadily increased the number of homegrown standards to support IFAB. You see there of the 314 standards published, 147 were homegrown. Okay. We also conducted three external stakeholder consultation workshops, namely in the energy sector, the agro-processing sector, and the construction sector. The graph below shows you the new standards published per sector over the three-year period as well. Moving on to the next slide. This is basically our performance for the past year, and you will see that we have achieved all our KPIs except the revenue KPI. And the revenue KPI is just about, just less than 40 million unfavorable. So you will probably engage a bit more, but you will remember from our presentation last year as well. What we have realized is that although the revenue was not achieved previously as well, we still set stretch targets for the next year. What we have done for this year, and you will note, is we use this as a stabilizing year, and our target for this year is relatively the same as what our target was for last year for revenue. Previously, what we did is, although that wasn't met, we still set stretch targets for ourselves as well, and we realized that that wasn't achievable. So we want to achieve what we can, what we set out for last year, and then we will grow the business from that. So this year is pretty much that we're in currently, a stabilizing year. I'm not going to go through each one of that. You can see the achievements on that. So I'm sure I'll pick up some questions on that a bit later then. I'll move on. I'm going to skip this slide as well because we have touched in terms of what our strategic pillars are. So I will move over to slide 9, dealing with growth. In the chair, the important thing that we need to take from these slides, it's a nice graphical view of what is in our corporate plan. And you can see there, as I said, if you look at the revenue, 560 million, relatively the same as what our target was last year, but we were about 40 million shy of that target last year, and we kept the target relatively the same this year, and stabilizing the business, and then from that, you'll see the turnaround of the business as we grow over the next 2 years from there. And you'll see that trend basically the same for all of our KPIs. So if I look at the next one, the new product, you'll see we kept it more or less the same as what it was last year, and then from there, once we get all our building blocks in place, we can then grow the business steadily. So I move to the next one, slide number 10, competent and empowered employees. Once again, the same principle, steady growth from last year and into next year, and then we can ramp that up in the third year, and you'll see the same for the one on the right as well. Okay. We're going to move over to slide number 11, and that deals with IFAB. And for the first year of this year, previously, all our IFAB commitments were very much targeted at our legislative mandate, which was the development of standards. And you'll see that on the left-hand side. But for the first time in our new corporate plan, we also have been looking at how we can assist in the achievement of IFAB through our commercial mandate as well. On the left-hand side, you will see that we have revised 12 new standards and predominantly enhancing localization of clothing and textile, leather and footwear, so around about the safety of products. We've also looked at support expansion of plastics, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, cosmetics, support of growth of agro-processing and ocean economy, food, fish, and abalone, enables management of energy demand and efficiencies, the buildings and electrical cables, and then contribute to sustainability of water supply, the reuse of grey water, and then lastly, helps to create regional supply chains and infrastructure, the general and electrical supply. But as I said, we have also looked at how we can assist IPAB through our commercial mandate, and we have identified ways there as well. And so we look at an enhanced market access for our SMMEs, support government and industry initiatives. We have quite an extensive project that we're working on the jobs fund at the moment, and that's about 30 million. Support commercialization of indigenous solutions, the traditional medicine testing, and then enables diversification sources and demand of electricity, investment to renew and modernize equipment. And we're looking at growing that part of the business as well in support of IPAD and not just our legislative mandate. If I move over to the digitization strategy of the business, so a couple of years ago, we were audited by two of our external foreign entities that accredit us, namely RBA and FFSC, and they advised the business that while we are quite sound in terms of our business model and how we conduct our business, the growth of the business will not be sustained manually, and they advised that we look at the digitization strategy of the business, which we subsequently did. So we went live just more than a year ago with a new system that would digitalize our customers basically engaging with us. It was just the one part of the business, which was our certification business that we did then. So previously, what a customer would do is go onto our website, download a PDF document, fill it out, and then fax it or email it through to our call center, and that would be recaptured. Right now, the customer, if they want to renew their certification or start a new one, they could go online, complete it online, and all the engagements would be online. So they would get a real-time response from the system to say, we have received your application, it is being processed, it automatically goes to the back office will complete that in terms of quotations and so on, and all that engagement will be electronically with the customer. That's just the first phase of it. What we have done is the back end of that, once all the audit packs are completed, that goes to our back office, and we have an approvals board. That was pretty much a manual-driven business on Excel, and we've digitized that business as well. So let me just show you what the efficiencies were. So prior to digitization, we had single-digit figures in terms of first-time approval. So from the time that the files get sent up, and you must understand, back then it was sent up from the regions as well, so it would be couriered, would be quite a big file, and if that file was not approved, it would be couriered back to the region again, fixed, and it could go up and down. And you can imagine the customer impact that had, which is extremely adverse. We have moved that with the digitization to a 93% first-time approval rate, and we have also digitized the movement of the files, so we don't courier the files up and down. It just obviously has a major positive impact on our customers as well. We've also implemented a tool that does scanning of our IP, and that's real-time scanning globally, and it scans on two levels, both a marketplace like Amazon or individual websites as well, and it looks for infringement of our IP. What we've also done then is digitize the management of that. So in terms of, you can imagine, if we, and we do have thousands out there, we don't have the capacity to deal and scan through all of those things. So we've digitized how we actually do manage that, and those letters get then systematically generated out to the customers to switch on those sites and warning and so forth. Okay. It is a really great breakthrough, but something that we can leverage for other parts of the business and for other entities as well. We, in discussions, for example, with ICASA, to be able to assist them with that as well. If I move on, we have an extremely rich capability around business intelligence, which is actually mobile enabled as well, so we can see on my mobile phone where we are in our business, whether it's finance, HR, or anything. We have that capability right now within our organization to be able to do that. We are in the process of building dashboards for every single business entity, basically. So as we upgrade the system, even prior to that, we build these dashboards so we can make informed business decisions. I'll give you an example of the two business areas previously, before it was automated. There was a lot of finger pointing in terms of, obviously, if we only had 9% first-time approvals, everybody was blaming everyone else why that was the case. Once we put in the BI tools, we could make real-time correct decisions in terms of where are the bottlenecks, where are the problems, and is it related to skills development, is it related to people not understanding, maybe not understanding a specific standard, and we could drill down to that level. We could even go up one level and say the people that do the approval, is there a problem over there, do they not understand it as well? So right now we have the ability within the organization to make informed decision making, which is a huge plus. Then we have started with our customer dashboard. We do not have an end-to-end customer CRM system in the company at the moment. That will be our very first project that we kick off. However, what we have done is we've developed very rich business intelligence reporting, pulling information from disparate systems and pulling that together to get our first view, single view of the customer, which we never had before. When I started in the organization 2 years ago, literally a customer complaint that was sent to us via the CEO customer complaints line would literally take about 6 weeks just to understand what the problem is. You can imagine if this file is manually being transported from, let's say, Cape Town or Durban, we don't know where that file is in the process. You've got to find out who that actual person is. We don't no longer have that problem. Right now, we can see where this customer is engaging with us and what the issues are. It's not completely not completed yet. That's just the first phase of it. When we go live with the new CRM tool, which will be in the next couple of months, that capability will be built into that toolset as well. All of this is underpinned, and this is one of the reasons why this slowed our journey a bit. Our infrastructure could not cater for the digitization journey. So what we basically had at our head office was a 40 meg line, and in our regions, Durban had a 3 meg line. All other offices that you saw on our national footprint had a 2 meg line or less. Now I can guarantee you, you have better infrastructure on your cell phone right now and at your home than we had to run our business. Okay. We have now upgraded that, and it is on what is called a metro internet, Ethernet. So, in other words, it's on fiber, and so as and when we need to scale, we can. Okay. So right now we've got 120. You can imagine moving from Durban from a 3 meg to 120 meg. The impact that has on the ability to service our customers. Each of our other regions, we've moved from 2 meg or less to 2. By 10 or 20 meg, depending obviously the size of the offices. But the ability we have is to scale that up as and when we require. Okay. This is a huge, huge plus factor in terms of us being able to service our customers better. Okay. That project has been completed. We're in the very final stages. The lines, everything are in. Oh, maybe I need to stress this as well. Prior to this, we had one single line going into all of our areas. So there was absolutely no backup, no failover. So that line was down, and most of it was copper. And with copper theft, you know, we were very vulnerable. All of that has been now with a backup, which is also fiber in most cases. We'll move on to the next one. The board has approved the next leg of our digitization strategy. And it will roughly be about 300 million over the next 3 years. Obviously, I say approximately 300 and approximately 3 years. It depends on the availability of the funds. Okay, if we do not have the funds really available in the period of time that we need it, it might go longer than 3 years. And then bullet point number two, I think we're all very familiar with the fourth industrial revolution, or especially around the enablement of that. But just to say that our strategy is focusing on Internet of Things, cognitive systems, next generation of security, and we are not looking at this stage in our corporate plan. We do not cater for 3D printing, for example, or robotics. If and when we need that, it would be in the next track. The next three-year journey is just focusing on that as enablers. If I look at the last part of that slide, I've already spoken about the single view of the customer and the CRM tool. When I talk about multi-channel customer engagement, so we will have the capability where our customers can engage with us via a mobile application or via their computer or calling to the call center, but it would be totally integrated. In other words, I will start my engagement with the organization, whether it's new business or whether it's a query, on my phone. If I run out of data or for whatever reason cannot do that, I can continue with that with the reference number on my laptop or just calling into the call center. Okay. And then this is not, our journey is not a like-for-like replacement. We are looking at business process optimization. So we've got a very rich team. We've documented all our business processes within the organization, and the whole idea is as and when we refresh technology, it is done with optimized business processes as well. If we move over to the fourth industrial revolution, you will see basically three bullet points over there, and it's the three different levels that we are going to be touching and influencing on that. The very first one speaks pretty much to our legislative mandate, and that is the development and facilitation of the development of standards for the fourth industrial revolution and smart cities, smart industry, industry 4, and so on. The second one is basically collaboration with the DTI, which is a hybrid of our two mandates. And then the last mandate is pretty much our internal focus of what we are doing within ourselves. So let me just touch base in terms of the top part, which is our legislative mandate and what we are doing over there to facilitate that. So the very first one over there is participating in various international forums dealing with the development of standards and Industry 4, the fourth industrial revolution, and obviously other digital initiatives. So the IPAP commitments, we certainly look at this and how we can assist with that, especially in the electrotechnical standards and others as well. The third bullet point, participate in work of the SDGs, and well, we say 15, I think we're on 17 now already, and obviously that's about networks, technologies, and infrastructure as well. And then lastly, leveraging these global participation and bringing that back home and seeing how that will impact the NDP and IPAP and then certainly the national e-strategy as well. And then on the second level, as I said, is a hybrid of our two mandates, and that is to collaborate with other DTI entities and see how we can assist with that. And we're doing that both formally and informally as well. And then lastly, I've already spoken about our own digitization strategy, what we are doing there, and where we find ourselves moving ahead of others. We can certainly influence both the first and second level as well, that is the standards and industry, as well as other DTI entities. Okay, I'm going to end there. We've got our financial appendices, but I think we'll deal with them in the question time if there are questions around that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Honourable members, there we have it. Let me just say that we will not engage with you through the media. We are engaging with you through the committee. We know we can ask you questions at any time. We will write to you.
if we need clarification, we will also arrange to visit your site so that we can look at some of the names and things like that. Honorable members, can I get an indication who ever wants to engage? Seeing that the members are still looking, let me kick off. And I have a number of them. The first one is related to your mission. Your mission. You have there I'm going to use the original slide, the slide on the overview of the SABS, the mission there. You are talking about the towards the efficient functioning of the economy. Now, we know that we are confronted globally and also nationally with very profound economic challenges. Can you be a little bit more specific? Maybe give us one, two of the successes that you have had vis-a-vis those interventions. Then I'm going to come back to it, the B part of the question, to give you particular examples. But in your presentation, you time and again refers to the SMEs. I want to use the term that you are using because, no, you call them SMEs. We are particularly concerned about the successes that we have made in enabling the SMEs. And when the Minister of the Department of Small Business Development and the Department engages with us, they're saying one of the problems that SMEs are having is both ownership and access to electronic equipment. Can you tell us what you're doing in that regard? My second question would be about your slide in the original document number 5, which is about the board, the organogram. You refer there to a social and ethics committee and also to a finance and investment committee. Now, I see you have Mr. Elman and also Mr. Ndlovu. No, I don't know whether it's Mr. or Ms., but there's an Ndlovu serving on the ethics committee. Could they indicate to us what the ethics committee is doing to ensure that within corporate governance, particularly when it comes to standards, that there is indeed ethical principles? Let me give you an example. We can't allow a situation where we have this cheap equipment being used in informal settlements, and they drop over, and they burn, and people die. Now, we are informed that the DTI has looked at that. But have you looked at it as well? That's just the example. So don't debate the example, but tell us more in terms of what exactly is it on ethics that the FARB is doing. Then I'm going to jump to your slide that talks about the SABS strategic objectives. There I want you to particularly tell us what are the challenges that you anticipate in achieving the strategic objectives, because your slide 8 in this file talks about that, but you have not shared with us what the challenges are. Why we appreciate the challenges is that you begin to self-correct And then if you share it with us now, we can come back to you within a defined period of time to say, what have you done about those challenges? Therefore, I would like you to also then, if you respond to that question, maybe indicate to us a time frame. Let me skip most of my questions because I see that hands coming up and go to the finances. On the finances, I'm looking at the amount that you have here for marketing and communication. For 2018-19, you have an amount of only 8 million. And you have spoken elaborately on digitization. Now, I would assume that that would be covered under that budget line. If I'm wrong, correct me. And then you also lower down in that same budget talk about post-retirement medical aid and pension. Now, I have no problem with the post-retirement. But I just made the comparison to say you're spending more on post-retirement medical aid and pension than what you are spending on marketing and communications. Could you tell us whether you're comfortable as a board with that scenario? Then just the final one on finances is you have bad debt of 44 million in 2017-18. I see it has come down this year to 3 million. But can you just explain to us there, because you were talking about having a qualified audit for the last year. What is that bad debt there?
Thank you very much. Honorable Faber will be the next member that will engage with you. Honorable Faber?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page 14, just quickly, I see that you've got an online system that enables customers to process the new and recertification applications electronically. I would just like to know, is it happening electronically? How do you actually physically see if the product is still of exactly the same standard? Because I can change my standard. And you don't really have to know about it, so I'm getting recertified without anyone coming to check it out. And this I believe, is a problem. I know we're working with new technologies and stuff, but there has to be a warm body on the ground to actually check it out. Then Chairperson Honorable Kachalia wrote a question, or asked a question, written question to Minister Ross Davies on the SABS. And I think they're quite aware of that. And it is on bribery that we believe happened in the SABS, specifically towards coal that was supplied to Eskom via Tegeta companies, one of the Gupta companies. We know that the coal quality was inferior. We know because Eskom actually told us that as well. And it was certified by this SABS. So I would like to know, has there been any charges made? Who was it made against? And why did we not get a written answer back? Because at the end of the day, all these entities do stay accountable to Parliament. And they have to account to this. And if we don't get good answers from the Minister because the entities don't answer him, I think this is today a very good opportunity for the entity to answer us on that. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Pablo, on the second question, the Chairperson, in his opening remarks, did answer that question. The answer might not be satisfactory. In summary, what he said is that there is a forensic investigation at the moment, and giving too much detail on it may compromise. But the B part of your question that you're raising is to say, but why have you not answered that? Because they could have given you that answer. So I will leave it to them to still respond to that. But he has spoken to it in the introductory remark. The Honourable Makwebu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two things quickly.
I note that in your values, you indicate that one of your values is innovation. Now, I just want to find out, you know, are you working in collaboration with other institutions that are also, you know, tasked with innovation, like the TIA, Technology Innovation Agency, and that politicians across this table will represent constituencies? Now, what are the endeavors that you're doing to bring our young people into the innovation space, or to bring your work to them and help them to, you know, to be part of your values of in innovation, to deal with the challenges, and also to be part of innovators as we draw closer to the fourth industrial revolution? I just want us to give us a sense of what you are doing, if any, of course. That's my first question, Chair. My second question is on slide number 14. I hope I've got the right slide. That is your customer dashboard. It is my understanding that this customer dashboard is work in progress. You said you have not completed it, but it is now working. You want to improve it and finalize it to where you want it to be. Now, be that as it may, question is, are you able to give us a timeline? When will this dashboard be completed? Because, again, it is important that ordinary businessmen or young emerging entrepreneurs who want to get your services, you know, bring them into the market, they're able to access you, and that interaction with you is critical from where they are. So we need to get a sense that when will this dashboard be complete, and we say we've got a fantastic dashboard, people can access you anytime, raise questions, queries, and that to me is also important, Chen. So I want to get a response to that. Thank you.
Honorable Matebo, Makwebo, I hope you're going to allow me, just on the first question that you raised about you, you have a slide where you're talking about the doctoral and master's graduates that you are recruiting. I tried to look in your budget whether you're giving bursaries. Just link that with that. How do you recruit? Do you give bursaries, or how exactly you do that? Any other member? We covered. Okay. Can I give you an opportunity to respond to those, please?
Chair, let me leave that to the chairman and the CEO and the executives, and I'll then wrap up. But let me start by saying...
Your mic is sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I said I'll leave the particularly the detailed questions, sorry, Chair, that you asked, that have been asked by members on innovation, et cetera, to the executives to answer. But let me just preface the question that the Honourable Member has asked in respect of the question that Honourable Kachalia raised. It's this narrative of we know. So we have media reports that say something happened. We then have a preliminary investigation of facts. And before we conduct a forensic investigation, everybody then sits with a we know narrative. Now, I think it's important when we say we know that the SABS doesn't know in terms of fully what really happened in Middelburg on that day in 2015. It will help all of us if we all collectively know the same thing from a forensic investigation. We do that with all the other investigations. I don't understand how this particular forensic investigation has become an issue of different people having this idea that they fully know. And for me, that's problematic, because if I'm being investigated and everybody says they know, then I would suggest then collectively maybe let's stop the investigation, because it's a waste of money. We don't fully know. We will find out, and when we do, that will be reported. But what we know and what we have reported is that it was the SABS that, in the preliminary investigation, picked up, and now I'll sketch it, you know, so that it's coming from what the board knows. In the preliminary investigation, we picked up that there was this serious sample that was sent. We had a relationship with ESCOM that was dealing with the testing of coal to be supplied to the power station. That, the results of that are very clear. They've been, you know, disseminated. But there was this request of a special sample to be tested, and for the SABS, and again, it's all been reported in all media. The SABS has to have the ability to test any sample that anyone brings. We don't know if you come to the SABS and want to test something. We don't know what you're going to use it for. We can't control what you. But if we say no, we don't want to test your sample because you are associated with the mafia. We don't know how you're going to use that sample or the results of that sample. Then it becomes problematic because then that's a policy shift. That is to say, the SABS has to know the nature of the people that they're testing for. So in my advice to members is you can ask and you will be answered. But things that we don't know yet, we will come to you, and as we come to you on this one, we don't know. 2015 is what, 4 years ago? We will find out, and there won't be any sacred cow.
Thank you, Chairperson, for responding to that, Chairperson of the Board. But particularly that last piece of information that you gave to us, 2015. We will find out. 4 years is too long. Also, we have had a parliamentary committee. They didn't appear before us. And people came and made certain statements under oath to that committee. And we, as members of parliament, are all equally concerned about that. But you would know, as well as I do, that this has seriously compromised the trust that some manufacturers have within SABS. And we're saying that's not good for the SABS, because you do have, as an institution, an important function to play. And therefore, when we raise this matter, it is not because we are trying to cast any dispersions on the SABS, but we are exactly trying to reposition you in the position that you deservedly and constitutionally have to occupy. So we are not doing it to criticize the SABS, but to reaffirm the SABS as a credible institution. And what we are saying to you, I think we are unanimous as members of the committee on that. When we look at the information that was given to the committee that investigated public enterprises, we were all stunned by that information that was given to us there. And we are therefore saying that that investigation needs to give us a report ASAP. That's the point that we're making.
Thank you, Chair. Can we clarify issues? When you say 4 years, Chair, I think let's be careful that the trigger was the assertion at the ESCOM parliamentary inquiry by Mr. Koko, Chela Koko, that the and he did that, and we, you know, he doesn't work for the SABS. He did that under oath, and he stated, so his statement was that the SABS approved the call. Now, when you say the SABS approved the call, which call are we talking about? Are we talking about the call that ESCOM was applying, you know, that to...
Chairperson, can I interrupt you? It's precisely that we don't want to go into. Where we're saying, you are busy with an investigation. Give us the written report on that investigation. You did say it's a forensic investigation. And we're saying that by us engaging in this way,
you're not going to get this.
We are now fighting someone else's battle. That's not what we want to do. We're saying that if you can give us the correct facts and what we understand, both in terms of the reply that you have given to the DG of DTI, that some of us have been privy to, that we want you to do the investigation. We appreciate that you are prepared to do that, be it forensic or otherwise. But we don't want you now to come and open up what has happened in that committee of parliament that we discuss it here. That report must go to that committee of parliament so that they can deal with it, and we have full confidence in them to be doing their work effectively and to give us a report or a response on what comes from the SABS. For us, as this select committee, it is important that when we engage with you as the SABS, that we raise it with you, not that we want you to give the answer to us, but that answer has got to go to those who requested that information from you. Thank you. Honorable Mahwebo is raising his hand. I hope we're not going to open the thing further, Honorable Mahwebo. I'll give you a chance, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Sir, I am not going to open it, but I'm just going to just throw one thing on the to the board quickly on this matter. I think it's important. And here is my point. We respect that a forensic investigation is being conducted, right? But surely any investigation is scoped and defined with clear terms of reference, and part of amongst that, when you're scoping and defining that, there's a timeline. Now, what we want in this meeting is to commit to us, but when your service provider was scoping that, surely you gave him exactly what you want within a particular timeline. Now, you cannot be left open-ended, because you want to come back 6 months down the line, forensic investigation is still undertaken. It can't work like that. So tell us now, the service provider is appointed, you instructed him that you want a report in this date. Now, what is that date that we can expect the report? That's all I want to say, sir.
Thank you. Good point. You have it, Chair?
Thank you. Respectfully, Chair, and respectfully to the members, what I was addressing, Chair, or clarifying, was the issue of 4 years is too long. I just wanted to put that into context. But if you don't want me to deal with that issue, I will respect your processes, Chair.
No, please deal with it.
Yes. So all I wanted to say was the issue of 4 years did not arise because what actually kicked this thing out. So this thing could have festered and lay there. We didn't know. No one knew what had happened. It was the claim that kicked up this dust storm, and therefore that's the period which we should look at. If I'm wrong, then please correct me. And the suggestion that this issue has then somehow translated to the credibility of the SABS before we have addressed it is another issue I wanted to address, because I have, with the mandate of the board, have been meeting industry associations. Unfortunately, when others go to the media, they talk about specific businesses. We're not there to cherry-pick winners in industry as the SABS, but those that have relationships always want to go to to whichever relationship they have to try and gain advantage. But we meet as a board, we have a fora, which we call the advisory board. I've met with industry associations, and they are all determined and confident in the maintenance of the SAP BS mark, because it's developed by them. We are referees. So the standards, the marks, it's all owned by private industry, and I've met with them. They are very happy with the referee role that we play, and they are very happy to move away from this thing of ad hoc, you know, approach to specific people that can. They are, remember, business people, and I chair a listed company. I love this. So if you don't meet with industry associations, you speak with one voice, then you lose the plot. So as we stand, Chair, I can confidently say, with the business associations that I've met, or industry associations that I've met, we've got a very, very positive response for them. From them, we are forming this advisory board so that we can solve the problems almost immediately as they occur. Let me shift to answer Honourable Member's question. We will have an answer within, or as the forensic investigators have started. We are hoping from the engagement letter that they will be finished within a month.
Thank you very much, Chair. CEO.
Thank you, Chair. And my chairman always has the permission to nudge me and stop me when I engage. So I just want to maybe start with the issue of the communication on these issues. And part of the difficulty we have is that the real situation is this way, the communication is another way. And our country is, I guess, what we're receiving is that it's so thirsty for news on corruption of state entities that even if it's a small issue, it then raised to a different level. The issue of bribery, our response was that we did not have bribery for the time. That was our response, and it was sexual. I can't then engage with how that got changed to what got out and how it was represented in the media. What I can stand by is the response we gave, which is factual and truth, what then happened with the message after that is not something that from the hierarchy that I can then engage with. But I'm very comfortable with the answer we gave, and it was factual. We did not have a bribery during that time. That we answered that question factually. And the interpretation that we were hiding information is something that I am not able to engage with. And the second issue is that, in terms of the issue and the primary investigation that the chairman is talking about, that there were two statements that were made, two different committees, the inquiry and the common inquiry. Committee made a statement. It shocks me as a citizen of this country and as a CEO of the SABS that no one talks about that part. That none of my principles that are supposed to balance, bring a balance and protect the entity and engage with the line of the truth that is neutral, are engaging with that statement that that was made by the committee that was responsible for the inquiry. How the other committee engaged with the issue and gave a statement is something different. But again, the challenge as a citizen and the person involved in it is how the other part, which was exonerating the SADF, doesn't get any airtime. Not even here is a balance. Why is there a contradiction between what's being said to the Eskom inquiry about the outcome of the preliminary investigation and what's then being carried out in the media? And I do want to put that out as a challenge, and but also as an expectation from myself as a person that has taken Tumamina before Tumamina became a rallying cry and committed to this institution, that I do want to feel like there is a balance in engaging with the issue. So I leave it at that. And we are respecting the process of the investigation. It's important to us. We've worked very hard to clean our own internal processes and put systems in place, what Ian's talking about. And we do want a clean, clear investigation. So no one is blocking, you know, that process. We do want to understand what happened that Saturday night. The Honourable Chair, the issue of SMEs. So when I joined the SABS, that was the biggest issue, that SMEs were not able to access the services of the SABS. And I'm just going to talk through the interventions we put in place. And the first intervention was really to create a facility to enable the participation of SMEs in standards. So those who engage with these issues, they will know that, and that's why the Competition Commission is interested in this basis, that these players can get together and define a standard, and that's what defines what sells in the market. And it cuts out the small players, and that was from the start, as I engaged with the issues of the ACDF, that was the issue that was put on the table. And so we created then in our regional offices, we put video conferencing facilities, because SMEs will always complain and say, if I'm running a small business, I'm everything. I'm the CEO, CFO, marketing person. I don't have money to go spend a day at the SABS in Pretoria. So they want to be able to spend the 2 hours wherever they are and connect through their computer with the discussion, so that their voice is heard in the definition of the standard. And we made this possible early on in my time. The cost of participation of SMEs, we also tried to engage with that and see how we can assist some of the SMEs. We ran a program for the youth, young standardizers, and we give we ran a competition for students to then write about standards and the impact of standards in the economy, just to get them interested in standards, and then give awards for young standardizers. We established an SME department, which was the new department under our certification, and that SME department had to then be separated from our certification because there's a conflict of interest. So the SABS never used to assist an SME to develop their quality system. We only audit, and if we do both, there is a conflict of interest. And so we had to establish that function outside of the certification department, and we're helping a number of provincial governments with their supplier development and SME programs, and the program has been running for five years now. We also repurposed our design institute and developed a five-year strategy. In that five-year strategy, we then bidded for work with Transnet for youth and for young entrepreneurs. We had a program with TIA to help them in their a youth program, and a number of programs to assist SIDA. Because this is a service we give to the entities that have a mandate for funding of the SMEs and youth program. We pitch for the work and then we deliver in line with their mandate. So we've done quite a lot to center that, you know, including getting in the SAGF flow where we have committee meetings, traditional healers that came to discuss the issues of standards in Muti, and how we can ensure that there is the basic safety considerations, the heavy metals that get tested, and to get them drumming on the third floor of our building, because they're discussing standards and how standards affect their work, was quite an interesting engagement. People stopped working and wanted to come and see. But it's something we're proud of in terms of our engagement. The issue of ethics and in our environment, that is something that's very important, because when somebody has an SABS mark and there is a tender and they get a shortcut to get to the SABS mark so that they can tender and somebody else gets frustrated, that has a big impact on our people. And so at the level of operations, all the systems and processes we've put in place was to take that possibility away. Ian spoke about files and the files being physical documents. In 2015, we had files that were in people's boots for months. Until we implemented the system where we could account for every file and every customer, it was difficult for us to find out and do an audit of all the files that were not getting through the system. So the fourth industrial revolution and the digitization of our services is key to the SABS in terms of trust, but it also in terms of us being able to service more and more customers. On a paper-based system, we reached our limit. And if we had not invested in a digital platform, we had already been warned by our accreditation body that that was going to be a risk for the SABS. So the board put an ethics line for the SABS. It's operated by an external party, and the reports are looked at by our internal audit, and they are reported to the board audit committee. And the issues that then are reported there are engaged with either by legal, if they're consumer issues, we pass them on to the consumer commission. And if there are issues that are complaints about our employees, then we deal with those issues in line with our HR policies. But we get all sorts of issues from that line, and we advertise it. Challenges, Chair, I'd like to request that maybe we leave that to the end. There's a bit of a shopping list, but let me then request before we close that just a special a subject that we engage with specifically. Recertification, there was a question about, if it's a platform, how do we then make sure that it's the product? And one of the criticisms that we get is that, our process is costly. It's costly because it's thorough. So we sample, we don't work with a golden sample. We sample in the factory, we send an auditor to go and audit the systems and the processes. The factory must be running and they sample from the production line. they mark the sample. If the sample is too big, then we arrange for transportation. If it's not, we take the sample with us. And then the issue of then where it's tested, obviously there's been a development of private sector laboratories, and they are all accessible to the market, and we're trying to then work the arrangements where we don't have full capacity, we engage with those to service our customers. But it's a process that is managed tightly in terms of the SABS giving a mark that has credibility both technically and otherwise, and that we can confirm. If you go through our files, you'll find a very thorough process. So it's not even with the digital process, that is to make sure that the customer gets a quick feedback, that the customer can interface with the processes, which was impossible in the past. It's not to cut the process, to make the process more efficient, but to ensure that the customer is informed of the progress of their service at the SABS. Innovation, I've already spoken about the work that we are doing with TIA and the young people that we ran with Transnet. We also have schools, where we can send some of the photos, primary school children in their lab coats and hard hats totally enjoy feeling like they're working in the lab and they're looking at the lab. That's a vulnerable consumer. And if we don't engage on the issues of quality from that age, then the children themselves don't quite understand the dangers that go with certain products, and that's where we start our investment at primary school level. So in terms of the issues at Maliba, I don't know if I've left anything, but my colleagues can then go to the details on some of the issues. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, can I just complete the presentation? I think for the benefit of honourable members, standards are voluntary. And what that means is not everything that we do in standards covers life. For instance, search engines like Google, Firefox, Outlook, and Safari, there are no standards for that. They are ahead of their time, and they may never be standards. The only time that you'll have standards is when you want to, when things go out of hand. In the US, standards are made completely private. There's no legislation that governs standards. In the EU, as they move towards a single market, they probably will just be, rather than have national standards bodies, which you call NSPs, you probably have an EU-wide private sector, without a statutory requirement for how that's regulated. So, in a sense, standards are made by a conglomeration of interested parties. Industry plays a major part because they are the ones who recognize a need for a standard. And then there's consumer associations, there's government who's an interest, and then other stakeholders. The idea is that standards are not created such that they're anti-competitive. Currently, there's a huge debate worldwide, and I'm doing a master's at VETS, in competition law, that deals with intellectual property within standards. So there are certain people that want their intellectual property rights incorporated within standards so that they can then make money. So there are a whole host of things that are related to standards. So I think it was important to make that point, that insofar as standards are concerned, they are voluntary. But insofar as protecting the consumer, this is where you have regulators like the NRCS and regulators in the Department of Agriculture, regulators in health. Ideally, there was a move some time ago to have, you know, the meat products, for instance, where you have the outbreak of listeriosis being brought under NRCS. I used to be the chairman of the NRCS, by the way, and that didn't happen. And that's obviously a political agenda that honourable members should look at, because yes, if it's not, these things are not managed properly, you'll have a situation where people then attempted to pass, you know, certain regulations. For instance, my concern in this country is that meat products currently contain too many, deleterious elements in terms of, being injected with to get them to grow very fast. Those are issues that are of a national nature to protect consumers. I'll stop there, Chair.
I see the two members are raising their hands. Is it a point of order, or is it?
No.
Because I don't want you to raise further questions until they've responded to what we have raised. But let's hear you.
No, Chair, it wasn't a point of order. It was just a follow-up to the response when the time allowed. I just wanted to be recognized.
Okay, we'll do that later. Honorable Fabio, you're on the same page? Or the same WhatsApp?
Yes.
Okay. That's an indication that we'd want to follow up. We want to conclude the session by 12:15 latest.
Absolutely. I think this could be done,
Chair. No. Any further responses, CEO?
No.
Are you covered?
Yeah, Chair, the issue of the post-retirement employee costs, the finances, we'd like to deal with that as part of the challenges. I bring fence them under the challenges, and I'm asking that we just deal with the challenges, and the chair indicated that they will then hold us to a turnaround around those issues, and we, Council, so I would like us to then have our release and be able to then talk to why that's a challenge for us. And I'm asking that towards the end that we deal with. Post-retirement is one of those.
Okay. The rules and procedure also allows you, CEO, that if you want to, you can say that I will respond to you on these matters in writing, and then you give it to us, and we will make time as a committee to look at that. So
okay.
It's
Thank you.
Up to you. But I see the gentleman next to you wanted to speak. Do you want to add briefly?
Thanks, Chair. Just to complete the question, Chair, your very first question was around our mission and examples of that. So while it's very difficult to obviously give physical, practical examples, I'm going to just demonstrate how we do that impact. So I mentioned earlier that of the 314 standards published, 147 were homegrown. Now, homegrown standards enable local industry to develop certain products and ensure a certain quality for the product. And 147 new ones were developed in the last financial year. Over and above that, I don't know the exact number, but there's certainly over 2,000 customers that we have certified for ISO 9001. And as we know, ISO 9000, what basically you're doing is guaranteeing the end product of that. So all of those things would have a positive impact and stimulate the economy. And then the very last question, Chair, was around the cash customer dashboard and the timelines around that. So as you know, within our corporate plan, there's a three-year journey. We have started that journey. And as and when we have new systems that's implemented, that the customer dashboard will be enriched as we go along. But we have already a very rich one now already. I would say it's probably in the region of about 60% functionality. And then, as I say, as we develop new functionality, it will be included in that. But we have a three-year digitization journey. Everything will be done every year.
Let's have Honorable Mokwebo first and then Honorable Faber. I also just have two final questions. Honorable Mokwebo?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a follow-up that worries me, Chair, through you, from the response I get from both now the Chairperson of the Board and the CEO. CEO's remarks were that, look, South Africa, we are a country that is thirsty for corruption. Now, with due respect, CEO, you can hold that view, you are entitled to it, but facts and the reality is that fraud and corruption in South Africa is rife and prevalent. Look around you, state capture, ESCOM inquiries. So you should understand why we worried about corruption. And SABS is a brand that we all need to forget. It's got my name, it's got your name in it. South African Bureau of Standards. I'm South African. We all South Africans in this country. But I want to remind you that it's not only the brand, but if that brand is compromised, Chairperson, it's got deadly consequences. What do I mean about that? For instance, if you are accused of bribery and you issue certificates certifying products that are inferior, it becomes deadly. That is why we are worried. So understand where we're coming from. We represent constituencies and members of the public that we represent. So you cannot be compromised. You cannot be compromised. Let's give you an example. If now there are allegations of bribery, you've got your brand in the products that are in the shelves in the market today. Let's use the issue of condoms. Got condoms that are certified by you. I hear you, Chairperson, saying that this is voluntary. I'm not worried about that. But as long as it's got your stamp on it, that product, we must have comfort that that product is never compromised. If our children buy condoms that are certified by you, and those condoms are found to be inferior because you were corrupted, or you took briberies, I'm just saying, I'm speaking hypothetically, understand where we're coming from. So we should be worried. It's not the issue of we are thirsty for corruption or we are looking for corruption, we say on scrap and crap for corruption. No. There's a context here that you cannot be compromised because you are the Bureau of Standards. And if you are compromised, you are not only killing this country, but it would be the worst thing you could ever commit. So that is the angle we're coming from, and that is the perspective. And that is the reality we're dealing with in South Africa, that where there's corruption, as politicians, we must stand and get rid of that corruption. We fought amongst each other, we refuse to be corrupt, and those who are corrupt, we push outside this space. And we will not work with any institutions that are accused of corruption, and we will fight that corruption. Not being thirsty in office, it's just being realistic that South Africa is on a downward spiral where fraud and corruption is rife and prevalent, and we're trying to get our act together moving forward. South African Bureau of Standards is a brand. Protect that. And therefore, we can never be, we cannot step back about that. We can never be silent about that. We'll be vocal and be strong. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Faber.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I'm sitting here today, I am quite concerned. The CEO is sitting here in front of us today when we were talking about this report. I just got an email here from the Portfolio Committee, from Joan Fox, the MP, Chairperson, on DTI. They received the report from your DG, from Lionel October, with the outcomes. You sitting here as the CEO, and we've been hearing from you guys that in the next month, here's the report right in front of me. I can read it to you about the irregularities of fraudulent certificates, and you're saying to me that there's an audit that will be done. Now, I want to know how come I've got the report here of the DG, and you are sitting in front of us and not giving us this information. Why not?
Can I rule that we consider the very important point made by Honorable Mokwebo as a comment and an appeal, and we don't engage further on that? You can respond to Honorable Father. But then the Honorable Matebula now also wants to raise a... No. You are at liberty.
Okay.
Please.
Okay.
About the condoms for the children?
Yes,
no, he hasn't got children, don't worry.
I wanted to raise about the issue of condoms, you know. I don't know, but those condoms, all of us, we do use condoms sometimes. I think we have a
friend. People are out of order now. You must speak for yourself.
I'm a married man. Yeah.
Even if you are married, do you use a condom? So I want to check with you, you know, those condoms, they go dry very easily and they burst. So I just wanted to check with you, and they've got your stamp on it. They are not quality.
Which
one? I think you must look at those condoms. Yeah.
What they may require from you is exactly which brand it is that you're talking about, but that's their job.
Yeah.
That's their job,
yeah,
to look at that. But then we also have that responsibility to feed that information to the bureau.
Okay.
Right. Let me conclude just with the questions by raising two. Just a yes or no. Are you collaborating or consulting?
Yes.
No, she remembers.
I remember the Mac condom. That one was introduced by the president, the Mac condom. They are not in good standard. They must go and look at them.
Okay.
Yeah.
After the trial and error, she can go.
No. You see, I won't mention the name of the member in the house. I remember that debate when the president, he was deputy president.
Yeah,
when he was asked questions about Sanak. I'm not going to say which political party you are.
But we all know.
We then asked the deputy president, how does he know? But let me raise the last question. This Agrima SA, do you have any relationship with them? My final one would be more of a comment based on what the chairperson says. I think it's important, members, that I share it with you, Honorable Ntebe. Last year, when we went to the meeting of the World Trade Organization in Argentina, we, the Honorable Joan and myself as chairpersons, were very perturbed, but could understand that most of the deliberations there were about e-commerce. We didn't discuss trade. You know, we come out of that conference without even a statement, which is what we do every second year when we meet. There was no statement, but it was on e-commerce. What we wanted to say to you with regard to that chairperson is that when you are talking about your standards and intellectual property, there's legislation that we're looking at. It is Section 75 legislation, also on IP. But we are expecting SEBS to be on top of those things. And I just wanted to share with you, because you also indicated the formal studies that you're busy with at Wits University, that we need to be informed about every aspect of the fourth industrial revolution. And what has been said by Honorable Makhwebu, you see, is that we are not only looking at South African interest on these matters. With our position in BRICS and the meeting that's happening now in July, with also the role that we play in CAFTA, the Continental Africa Free Trade Agreement, many of our fellow countries on the continent are looking towards South Africa to help. And we would not have a problem. I see you have here in your presentation today, your original work that you're doing. But what we anticipate would happen, you see, a country can't bring their products into South Africa. They send you to Swaziland, and then from Swaziland bring it by road. We are aware of this type of dynamics, but we say we're part of a global village, and in this global village, technology is going to be dominating our industries and our business within the next couple of years, and we need to be ready for that. Let's have quick responses on the questions from the Honorable Matebula and the Honorable Farmer.
Chair, I couldn't agree with you more, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, about your last statement that IP is the game going forward. And therefore, I think it's important for us as a country to pick people that are oriented correctly to lead our institutions. Let me address the issue that the Honourable Member has, has raised. I think again, the engagements like this are supposed to help to clarify issues, and that's why we should appreciate them. Submitting documents sometimes can be, sort of opaque, and we really appreciate the fact that we can be listened to. I think the first thing to clarify, Honourable Member, was the issue of what the CEO raised. He was talking about media statements, media with a penchant, and not the reports that had been tabled in Parliament. It would be very, very disrespectful if we questioned that. So it wasn't to do with that. Let me say for myself personally, because I think for you members, it is important to know where some of the people that you deploy come from, so that you understand their credibility and what they've got to lose. Because more often than not, you as politicians forget your own mistakes. I was the first person as chairman of Telkom to be approached by the Guptas. I'll put it right here on the table. They offered me shares in Sub Green Tech. They offered me, I said no, I don't want to be conflicted. They wanted me to stay on as chairman of Telkom. I'd been appointed by Steven Nyanda, and the new minister was in. So in terms of my own integrity, I gave up. And I, like in privacy journals, I didn't have a forum to go and announce how clean I am. It wasn't necessary. When the Mail and Guardian came to me to want to get a story before the Nkandla story, I did not want to be this hero. So in the end, I can tell you, even subsequent appointments, the so-called, businessmen that now you see being paraded by the other side. He was appointed by the same number one. I was instructed as a board member to appoint the new chairman, the so-called darling. So when we engage with people that don't want to play up to the gallery, it should be an engagement of mine, So to clarify the issue, because we could, we can talk about this around the fire, have a fire chat about this. When I was talking about standards being voluntary, that's a separate issue. That's to create the integrity. The standards making is one aspect. You then have conformity assessment. Standards just say this is the standard. If you want to test something, you have to test it to standard. But you don't necessarily have to test everything to standard because you have regulators. Regulators pick. And as Honourable Member has said, a regulator can pick six categories out of the standard of 15 that says test all these things. And then test those six. So we have to test. If the regulator says test, they want to test in order to achieve protection of the consumer. Not necessarily the quality, so the aesthetics, the way the thing, but just want to protect. So when Department of Health says, test these condoms, we test according to their requirement. And therefore, I mean, and the tests we conduct are the same tests that the British Standards Institute conducts for its own condoms. I've seen them, I went there, exactly the same depth, exactly the same procedure. So in a sense, that explains the two different aspects, Honourable Member, that there is the standards making that says this is the standard, and then there's the regulation that says this is what you should test to. This is what we call conformity assessment. Now, if we can, deal with the issue of media reports, we don't control what the media says, members, but my worry is all of a sudden this feeding in of the information, rather than the media coming, we are, and this is the issue of a brand. Somehow there's this penchant to internally or self-destruct. Because without this engagement, if somebody sends an email and says, I'm the DG, this is what I'm, information, and there's not engaged with his own entity on that, I cannot comment until I go in there, for a like this, to address that issue. So you can see, I mean, what's the purpose of sending information around that you have not, addressed? Like, for instance, let me give you a very good example of information that was sent to Parliament. And this is where the problem lies, Chairman. So you have information sent to Parliament and yourself that says the SABS used an entity that is illegal to conduct a test. That is illegal. In other words, it has not been approved by, it hasn't gone through the process. I'll read something for you. To Martin Couscous. Dear Martin, this is in this was written, I typed here, find a copy from the DTI. Find a copy of the letter in which Minister Mpashwa grants his approval on the restructuring of the SABS and informs the Minister of Finance accordingly. Mr. Trevor Manuel, approval of the restructuring of the SABS. I hereby wish to advise that I considered and approved the new SABS business model as required in terms of the PFMA. Under the previous CEO, the SABS undertook a series of business restructuring processes designed to ring-fence better standardization regulatory and commercial activities of the organization. The new CEO, Martin Couscous, presented a new business model that the SABS Council, at that time it was the Council, has approved, and that will be implemented by financial year 2007. In their letter, the DTI dated 9 September 2005, the SABS also indicated that tax clearance was obtained from the South African Revenue Services with regard to collapsing 7 tax-paying entities into one. In addition, they confirmed that there will be no redundancies and that there will be no external financial impact. I hereby wish to confirm that the new business model is signed with the DTI's objectives and that it appears to provide a sound foundation. Okay. And then there was a letter from Mr. Trevor Manuel approving. So, and yet, he writes a letter to Parliament saying, this is supposed to be in the DTI file. Now, did you understand, Honourable Member, why it's difficult for me to sit and make presentations to a parliamentary portfolio committee and information is sent? This is basically, it was a lie. And therefore, it creates a very difficult situation to deal with. That's why I said, Chairperson, some of the things one should, from an engagement of this nature, clarify. Now I'm forced to clarify an issue which would never have arisen but for this attention, you know, to. So that's the letter he wrote. I wrote a letter clarifying that we will investigate at the SAPS. And as soon as we found, and I said in my letter, and I can read that letter to you.
No, don't do that.
I said...
I want to stop that conversation.
As soon as...
Look, we have not seen the letter.
No, okay.
We have given you a time to explain a context to us. If need be, I will write to you.
Okay.
If need be. I have not looked at the content of that letter from DKI. And I chose not to look at it now. Please, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. The condom. Dr. Demana, that's RCT-made condom. There's a whole story behind it.
But I thought we have the answer on condoms. Then he says that it needs to get the standards given to them by the Department of Health. And if we have concerns, it might be better that we raise them through the Department of Health. Because they can't do anything unless the standards are adapted or changed by the Department.
I think just give the CEO a minute just to clarify that RTT issue, because again, it's a very important detail that may not be clarified at any other point.
Okay, now, I'll give you a minute and then you end with agreement.
Chair, the reason I'm referring this to our principals at the DTI is because this very company accused us of sabotaging them when we did not pass their condoms. And that's part of the very serious allegation against the SABS and myself and the board. And obviously we went through an investigation, but it remains an allegation that we're sabotaging industrial action. And so I was very happy that you brought it. Same name, and it's the same company, and the customer, you are agreeing with us that there's a problem with them.
Chair, therein lies the big picture. That when we get instructions, when people go, and this is very important for members to understand, and when I'm and for me, this was meant to be a service to the nation, and I think I've taken more than I need to. And it's precisely when individuals that have connections politically can jump the queue and go to those connections and cause an investigation to be done on the entity. An investigation that starts from a premise.
No. I'm going to rule you out of
Thank you, Chair. I'll respect.
Acronym. Yes, so the APRIMA is for innovative products in the construction industry that have not yet had a standard developed. And that's why we have homegrown standards. So once the process has gone through APRIMA, you know, then if the standard developed, then it passes on to our certification. To make the link, we have one of our executives as a board member of APRIMA so that we can pull whatever products that need to then move to the formal market. But this is for innovative products that might not necessarily have a national standard, but they have a spec and they can be tested for various applications because construction has a durability issue. And so before it becomes a standard, the product has to be tested in the market for how it operates. But we have a link, and it's a formal link to an executive that's based on that.
Thank you very much. Challenges, please. I hope you're going to be 1 minute on that.
Chair, may I take the offer to do that in writing. I think what the essence you're getting from the engagement and, you know, my chairman getting, it's because the difficult dynamics, and we would like to just navigate through some of our challenges carefully and be guided by the board.
Okay, can I test with the members? We're in agreement with that, because I wanted to add to that. If we look at the package before us, slide 30, there is the alignment with EPUB. And particularly the third bullet there talks about support growth of agro-processing, ocean economy, fish and abalone. Now, I wanted to ask if we, with that, can add that you tell us exactly what you're doing, particularly with regard to that alignment program. Two reasons why I'm asking it, because it's a big component of Operation Pakisa, but then also we have this problem with shortage of fish stocks. And it would be exciting if we are also observing that you are preemptively working on that. So you're okay with that, CEO? Right, time frames? How long do you want to come back to us on that?
A week, probably. A week? 7 days, Chief.
7 days. So we'll get it from you by, today is the 13th, by the 20th of June.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to allow you to raise questions anymore. I can't.
No.
You know that we are in trouble with time.
No, that's not the questions that I want to raise, Chairperson. That's what this issue of challenges, because you said you want to check with us if you are in agreement with that. So I'm responding to that. Can I?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Chair, I do not have a problem that these challenges may be sent to us in writing in the next 7 days, but I am worried because we do not have time, because if we get those challenges in writing and then we read them and apply our minds to them, then it will mean we must have another sitting with the entity and bounce possible solutions, and given our, you know, mandate, how can we assist them, you know, to get those challenges resolved. Now, realistically, will we do that? Will we have time to do that? Hence, I am saying, sometimes it's better to push to and get these things through now and see if there could be, out of 10 lists, there could be one or two we can resolve now. Because you're going to send me to my inbox. I mean, I'm all over the show in the next 20 seconds with the land restitution and the land review committees and everybody all over the show. You're unable to. So I'm looking at the practicality of resolving this issue, but I can see that they may be sitting with issues that are really pressing and really haunting them.
Mm.
But we are members of parliament. We are here to deal with those issues. There's nothing is sensitive too much for us that it must be sent to my inbox for my eyes only.
Mm.
So I'm just saying, you know, Chair, why can't it take another 10, 15 minutes to deal with this? The minutes can be adopted and the other business of this committee in another day. With due respect, it's just my proposition. Thank you.
Can we hear other members speaking on the matter?
I got an impression when the CEO and the Chair were speaking that probably we're not appreciating the magnitude of the issues they want to raise. And I'm of the view that they are not only seeking to raise issues for the sake of it. They are trying to raise issues so that they can be elevated to our attention, so that as and as needs be, there can be some intervention. Due to the time constraints now, we might not do justice if we say they must elevate those issues now. We might, however, through you, get the written challenges elevated to you, and we can be able to find space and time to thresh them out so that we do justice to their appeal. In essence, what I'm trying to say, Chair, is that probably let's take that route that you said earlier, and through you we can then find space and time.
Honourable Matabula, were you...
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry, Honorable Mahwebu, but we seem to be going, and I like the amendment made that you now are holding me accountable to make sure that we deal with that timeously. But we want to be effective if we look at the intervention. Thank you very much.
10 seconds
starts now.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say you saw a real live demo of a question from the Honourable Member in terms of condoms, went on to our site in terms of the customer portal, could give the information real time. Secondly, I'll be filing my responsibility if I didn't warn you that this water has not been tested and certified by SDS. Thank you, Chair.
Unacceptable. No, the problem is, you see, we don't have water here in Cape Town. So we take that issue. Can I conclude by just dealing with the two issues? Bear with us, please. Don't leave us yet. Members, we have here before us the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 6th of June, where we had the presentation from the National Consumer Commission. Tupeka was not here, and therefore you see that big draft minutes on the thing. I have looked at the minutes. What's his name? He was sending in, but he is the secretary for the Select Committee on Communications. T. Ngoma. Tulani. Honourable members, this one minor, because I've checked it with PMG as well. On, Rebecca, why you changed my copies? No, the one that has it is. On page three, that matter of Edgar. The question that I raised was not the overcharging of people compared to other retail shops. It was related to the additional fees that Eskom is putting on people for insurance. So can we just change that part? It was related to insurance. Not Edgar's prices. Edgar's can sell their techies at any price. That's not the concern. The problem is the additional charges that they put on. And it's not only Edgar's, but a number of other retail shops as well. With that amendment, honorable members, can I have a proposal for the acceptance of that amendment?
Will it water down our meaning if we agree to remove the name Edgar's and put the retail outlet?
No, it won't. I would agree with you.
I'm just saying.
I was giving Edgar's as the example, as I said.
No, but it's in the minute. And I'm just saying.
So we change Edgar's to retail outlet.
Yeah.
If you agree, I
propose that we remove.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable. We accept that. Can we have somebody second the minute? We only have two people. You were here.
Oh,
Madibula was here. You were not here. Okay, thank you. It's seconded as well. Thank you very much, members. This is the last item, which is the program for the next term. But as I informed you yesterday, Rebecca, just correct me. This program must still go to the Chair of Chairs for approval. It went there last week, Friday. But the Chair of Chairs did not come back to us. So the Chair of Chairs has got to present it to the Programming Committee and then approve it. He came back. Okay. Oh, this has been approved by the Chair of Chairs. So can we get somebody to propose for the acceptance of this program? Do I need to go through it again?
Will it Do we have a sense now, Chair, when is the MCOP Oversight Week going to?
Yeah.
Will it
it's 14th of, to 17th of August.
Where do we go?
No, you decide in the province. No, we're not going. That's the provincial oversight.
Oh, yeah.
It's put wrong here. It's not it's NCOP, but it's provincial oversight. Remember the one that we had last year? We do it normally in the third term. You decide as a province where you're going to do oversight.
Okay. Let me say it slowly.
Okay.
There's the provincial week. It is going to come in October, in November. There's an MCOP committee oversight.
Oh, the committee oversight.
That's what I mean, Chair. And I'm appealing that probably we should have the name of the province that you are visiting here.
We have agreed it will be Limpopo.
Limpopo, yes. If you go to the latter part,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Just well, before constituency period,
mm-hmm.
from the 17th to the 21st, it is not report back taking parliament. It is pre-visit in Gauteng. And if you agree to the amendment, I move for the adoption.
And I will second that.
Thank you. We'll adopt it. But Lupeka, can you hold this members and throw it in your dustbins. Lupeka will send you the corrected version this afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay. So you know what to change. So it's a committee oversight week and it's the pre-visit on taking parliament to the people. Sorry, I haven't looked at this beforehand. But thank you. We appreciate those comments. Honourable members, we are adjourned until next week, Tuesday morning, when we will be looking at...
Don't you have
the watch line? No, I'm worried about it.
I still have the phone.
They're not approved.
We will be looking at both next week.
But they are not approved.
Yeah, there was problems.
But they did not get a qualified
verdict. Our people are used to...
But you said qualified.
No, I said unqualified.
Unqualified.
Yes. We had 5 years of clean. And then,
so you must tell
you. You should have raised it in the session.
No, what you talk about.
Now I'm going to have a conversation.
Yay! It's not another.
We'll put it in our. We'll put it in our response.
Then by the way,